Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, country music fans of New England. This is Russell James of the band Scarlet Drive, and we'll be bringing a night of country music rock and roll to one of the best original music venues in Boston. Thursday, February 16th, we're bringing our patio tour to the Brighton Music Hall in Alston, Massachusetts, for a Thirsty Thursday event you do not want to miss. Thursday, February 16th, Boots and Whiskey presents the Scarlet Drive Patio Tour with special guests Houston Bernard and Nick Casey. Tickets are $15 presale with reservations through our website at scarletdrive.com or $20 at the box office the day of. We hope to see you there, and thank you for supporting live music.
Now, after years of planning, sweating, and going broke, here is the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle. You can email the show at bootsandwhiskeypodcast@gmail.com. That's bootsandwhiskeypodcast@gmail.com.
Just swimming with bow-legged women.
All social media can be found at Boots and Whiskey Podcast. The show is great, even if you're sober. Well,
my advice to you. Start drinking heavily.
Jim loves his music and his whiskey.
A real woman could stop you from drinking.
It has to be a real big woman.
This is the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle. Great music, great booze, and fun. Even for you non-drinkers.
Y'all want to drink whiskey? I'd like a Coca-Cola in a clean glass.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the final episode of the month of January here at the Boots and Whiskey Podcast. As always, my name is Jim. I am your host. This is the last episode of these feel-good stories or, important stories. Today we have Bailey James on the program, and I really kind of grappled with myself with this one because I wasn't sure if I wanted to make it the first episode of the month or the last in this series, and I think it was important to make it the last. Reason being, we talk about some heavy, heavy shit here. So for those of you, I'm going to put a little disclaimer on this episode, and I don't typically do that. First and foremost, we talk about suicide, and we talk about it pretty openly on this episode. So if you or anyone you know has grappled with the thought of suicide, you know, there's plenty of people out there to help. You're not alone. You're just not alone. So if you're ever, you know, feeling like you are or whatever, you know, there's like I said, there's plenty of help out there to get. And you're not alone. You know, you have people that love you. You have people that care about you. We here at the Boots and Whiskey Podcast, we love you. We care about you. So even if it's just a throwing us a message, you know, saying, hey, you know, I just wanted somebody to talk to. We're always here 100%. But with that being said, I don't want to make this sound like it's a downer of an episode, but we do talk about some heavy stuff, and I just wanted you to be aware of it. Other than that, I think the conversation is awesome. Really down to earth. Bailey James is a wonderful, wonderful young lady, and she's got an edge to her, folks. She does. And, she's taking music seriously. She's also working full time. You know, she's doing it. She's living the American dream, I would say. I don't want to give too much of her story away because she tells it great. So really, without further ado, I'm going to send it over to Bailey now. And I hope you enjoy the episode. And Bailey, thank you so much for telling your story so openly and giving others, you know, hopefully a sense of hope. And here you are, Bailey James. We want to give a big shout out to our friends over at Off the Rails here in Worcester, Massachusetts at 90 Commercial Street, Worcester. They have the best food, the best music around. You will not go wrong. Go to their website, offtherailsworcester.com. You can see their lineup of shows. You can see their menu. You can see the local talent they have. Absolute fantastic people. We love being a part of the Off the Rails family, and we love having them being part of our family. Thank you so much to Off the Rails. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Good morning, Bailey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am awake. Yeah. I'm here.
That's good. That's good. Well, thanks. Yeah. First and foremost, thanks for being on. It's a pleasure having you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Like I told you through text, this is about you. So I want you to go ahead and tell your story and I'll jump in.
Okay. Do you want me to go from the very beginning?
Sure. Wherever you want to start is where we start.
Okay. So I have always had a love for country music in general. I remember as a kid, one of my first memories was being like driven to ballet, and my dad would sing Johnny Cash to me in the car. Like Walk the Line and Folsom Prison Blues. And that's kind of where my love for music started. And those were the only two songs I knew, and I was like 6 at the time. And as I got older, I was just introduced to all the greats of country music. So I really wasn't listening to what was on the radio. I was listening to like Patsy Cline and Hank Williams. And when I was around 11, I decided that this was something I wanted to pursue full time. And at 11, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, but I knew that I loved music. Now, and so,
sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but were you playing music or singing or playing guitar or whatever before 11?
I was singing before 11. Okay. Yeah. But when I could learn how to speak, I was singing. I wasn't sure what I was singing, but
yeah.
Everyone in my family were like teachers and athletes, and I wasn't really good at any of that. So music was kind of my outlet and my thing. And around 11, I said to my parents, like, I really want to do music seriously. And for some reason, they took me seriously. And I went into this little studio back home. I'm from Philly originally. And I did a demo or two. I think it was Crazy by Patsy Cline and Blue by Leanne Rimes, and an opera song because I'm operatically trained.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. Which was not intentional at all. The only really good vocal teacher where I'm from in my little small town was like a world-renowned opera singer back in the day, and she toured with Pavarotti. And she taught me everything I know about vocal health and the voice in general. So she was absolutely amazing, and that really helped me out a lot. But I took that demo down to Nashville, and I started giving it to anyone that would listen, and kind of started building my team.
What? So could you belt out some opera right now if you had to?
So the opera songs I was doing were like Italian operas. I think I can't even remember the name of it, but occasionally I will. It takes a lot of warming up, though.
Yeah, I can imagine. Damn, yeah. That's incredible. Because you know, I gotta say, out of all of the people I've talked to, you're the first person to have said that they have opera training. And that's incredible.
Thank you. What people don't understand is that the best vocalists ever are opera singers, and there's not many around anymore because it's just not as popular. But right. They have the best vocal agility and stamina, and just in general, operas are harder to sing. So being taught how to protect my voice, but also do things with my voice I didn't know how to do at such a young age was really beneficial.
Yeah, and nobody understands what the hell opera singers are saying anyway. So
no,
you know, I know this is like a way, this is like way going out of direction here, but and totally different. But I've seen the Phantom of the Opera live probably like 2 or 3 times, and I still have to listen to the soundtrack to know what the hell they're saying.
I guess for me, I've just listened to it so much, I start to understand language.
Sure.
Sure. And I think every opera singer is different. But she, like the lady I worked with, her name's Deanna Reed. And she was just so like eccentric and what you would think of an opera singer and had all these insane stories. And so I really looked up to her as a vocalist and as a person. And she shaped my voice today. People always ask me why I sound the way I do and why I sing the way I do. It's because of her.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was listening to, you know, some of your music that you have out, and, you know, I was going to comment about how it has an edge to it that, you know, I don't want to say it sounds like everybody else because it doesn't, but it has that familiarity, if that's even the right word I want, that you hear your songs and you're like, ooh, I know this sound. But the sound of your voice gives it that kind of like, you know, kick in the ass that, you know, some others don't have.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I think back in the beginning when I start, because I made a whole EP when I was 11 too.
Holy shit. What are you, like a child prodigy?
Looking back, I'm like, what were you doing? Like, couldn't you just like go outside and be
right? Could you just be a normal 11-year-old girl, for God's sake?
No, I knew what I wanted to do from the beginning, and looking back at those songs, I cringe a little inside, but they're really cute. At that time, I wasn't songwriting at all. I had nothing to songwrite about. And,
right. Well, at 11, I mean, you barely know your ass from your elbow.
They would throw me into rooms with these Nashville writers, and I remember one time I fell asleep during the write.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah. Can you tell me about lunch today at school? Like,
That's what they kind of. Yeah, that's kind of, they were schoolyard tunes,
right?
And my voice was also different back then, and I've like researched a lot on how just like trauma can affect the voice and can change your singing voice, and I think I was listening to like Miley Cyrus on Joe Rogan's podcast, and she was talking about when she went through a lot of trauma and went through a lot of just insane things in her life, her voice deepened, so did mine. So now I'm like here with this much deeper voice than I used to have, and I think trauma like truly affects your voice, and I've been through a lot. So
all right, so I hate digging shit up like this, but you brought it up. When you say trauma, do you mean like things you've put yourself through or outside forces?
Don't be sorry for asking. I'm pretty much an open book. No. So I lost my brother to suicide when he was 18.
Jesus Christ.
And at the time I was 16. And I had been pretty much making music consistently. I had like a little bit of steam going now and a following, and my socials were doing really good. And I just remember from that like moment on, I was in fight or flight for at least 2 years. So everything everyone saw on social media, it was like just half of the picture. And my dad fell into alcoholism at the time. He was a really active alcoholic for about 3 years, and I was still doing music though and still putting on this face as if everything was okay, but I started to have really, really bad anxiety to the point I would have like anxiety attacks that lasted a couple hours a day, and I had to drop out of school and get homeschooled, and I had never had to do that in my life. I had just started high school in Tennessee. We had just moved a week before my brother took his life to Tennessee. And So there was just a lot going on.
Wow.
Looking back, I was like, I was doing fine and I was playing with it as best as I could, but I was a mess. And I was scared to talk about it with people online because people online are brutal. They're chronically online.
Yeah. Yeah. The people that live in mom and dad's basement that have nothing fucking better to do.
And when I finally did come out with it, there was a lot of support and a lot of love, but there was also people who were like, you're using his death as a way to get attention and I'm Jesus. Like, you guys don't know. I'm 16 at the time. I'm still a baby. And so these comments affected me and I just struggled with my mental health for the years after that. And, I finally became open about it last year because I was done hiding it and I kind of got to a breaking point with all of it. And so I was just honest with everyone and honest about our story and what was actually going on. I was a super wild child behind the scenes. I had this very good girl image, but I was like going out and drinking with my friends and partying all the time. And partially that was because I was really, 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 really sad.
Yeah.
Super fast. And that's all the trauma that I'm talking about.
No, sure. I mean you think about it, right? And you know, if were you and your brother very close before he died?
So we were close. We weren't as close as I'd like to be. He's my half brother, so we have same dad, different mom.
Okay.
And before he passed, my dad had moved him out to Tennessee. So they were living here before me and my mom were, just because he wanted to kind of get him out of the situation he was in, let him have his own life because he was being so closely watched. He was one of those people who just could not get a grasp on his mental health. It was like he had this hole inside of him. And so me and him weren't as close as I wanted to be. And that's why I was so excited to move to Tennessee because I had never really had that relationship with my siblings. They had lived in California for a lot of their life. And but we still, I mean, he's still my brother.
Right.
And I also was like dealing with because at that time it felt like I'd lost my dad too.
Yeah,
just because he wasn't the same person at all.
Wow. Yeah, you know, and at the I've never been a 16-year-old girl, but I can imagine you know, knowing 16-year-old girls when I was 16, like there's and looking back at life, like that's a very formidable time for, you know, girls, let alone boys. You know, I can only imagine, you know, that'll fuck you up pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and it did. And I didn't realize the amount of trauma, I guess, I had till I went to therapy and I started talking it all out. And they were like, well, we understand why you're not okay.
Right.
and so I went to therapy, started talking it out. I wasn't open about it till I turned 18 and I was like, okay, I can help other people with this. This can be a tool instead of always being like a burden and always having to handle things in a different way just because of the way my brain is wired. And so I started a little mental health movement and I've been very, very open about what was actually happening at that time. And when I finally told my story, it was super, super freeing. And a lot of people who didn't understand before seem to understand then.
Yeah.
Probably because I was finally being authentic to who I actually was. Because back in the day when I was like, well, I want to talk about it, there were people on my team who were like, no, you can't talk about that. Like, you're an artist and you're here to entertain and you're not here to talk about what's going on in your life.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
I think that's very, very far from the truth of what people actually want in an artist.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's why
that's why when I texted you earlier and I was like, you know, I have zero questions for you, that this is why, because it's, I feel like it's important for you to tell your, you know, because I think some people see artists or people in, you know, some sort of spotlight as not actually being people, you know, and it,
yeah. You know, and I think that's the problem when people are chronically online, they like, everything is a joke. Everything right. is funny. And I'm like, no, we're humans too. So right. user, whatever, whatever. It does hurt when you tell us like we're worthless.
right. And you know, it's always been, you know, my goal with this show is to, you know, let you tell your story, because now that, you know, somebody hears your story or hears this part of your story, you know, they'll go back and listen to your music and go, okay, I can kind of get or understand where she's coming from when she sings this song or that song or whatever. You know, there's a different kind of connection, I think, with the music when you actually know somebody's story.
Yeah. And I that's when I started songwriting, is when I finally had feelings to songwrite about.
Yeah. And
around this time, I met Nolan Neal.
Hey, everyone. Don't forget to check out our friends over at theafterglowboutique.com. That's theafterglowboutique.com. Or if you're local, they have a great shop at 43 Main Street in Blackstone, Massachusetts. All Boots and Whiskey podcast listeners get 20% off at checkout with the promo code BOOTS. That's B-O-O-T-S at checkout for 20% off at theafterglowboutique.com. Check them out. Tell them the Boots and Whiskey podcast sent you.
Who was on The Voice and on America's Got Talent, and at that time was a recovered drug addict and just like an amazing, amazing, amazing person. And he really helped me. He's one of the biggest reasons why I write the way I do today. He would sit me down and make songwriting fun, which is what I needed at that time, because songwriting always felt like such a burden to me. And he was like, no, you can write your feelings out and it's therapeutic. And so the time I spent with him, I mean, we wrote Finally Free and The Crow and The Spell and I Don't Need You and half the songs I've released today. It was really, really crucial, because I was like, I don't want to do country anymore. At that time, I was done with country. They weren't letting me sing what I wanted. They weren't letting me look the way I wanted or act the way I wanted.
Yeah.
And my influences were changing. I was listening to a bunch of like insane women like Courtney Love and Amy Winehouse. I love the kind of grungy rock, not your typical women in music. And there was none of that in country.
Yeah.
And it wasn't happening. There were no Jelly Rolls. There were no like unconventional country artists. And so
there was no L. King at the time.
No. And I went into that write with him and I said, I don't want to write country. I want to change my sound. And we wrote Finally Free the day we met. And I knew just like he was going to be such an important person in my journey.
Wow. That's awesome. And
yeah, he passed this year and to a drug overdose. But honestly, everything he taught me and the way I write now and the moody lyrics and all of that, I learned it all from him. So he was kind of like my music mentor.
Yeah. Wow. God, you've been through a lot.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Now, let me ask you, how is Dad doing now?
Dad is recovered.
Awesome.
Fully recovered and sober. And he's just the best. He's the best dad ever. So I forgive him for everything he put me through, because he honestly, time and time again, has just been there for me. He's my little roadie. He's at every one of my shows and just an amazing person and so strong.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I'm so glad to hear it. You know, it really, now how long has it been since all of this has happened?
So Nolan was recent, about 7 or 8 months ago, but all of that was when I was 16. So I'm 19 now. Not too long ago, but it feels like years and years.
Wow. So you're only, I say only, but you're only 19. You have the voice of somebody that has lived a life, which is, you know, I don't mean that rude at all, you know, but.
No, I appreciate that.
you know, because it's, you get some of these younger, you know, especially the female artists, you know, they have that, like, you know, again, no disrespect to anybody, but they have that, like, life is great sound to their voice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they haven't gone through anything. But, you know, for you, unfortunately, you've been through, you know, a lifetime of shit in less than 20 years.
And honestly, I'm telling you, I'd love to do a study, like, actually see a real study on how trauma affects the voice, because I had that same life is great.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I like the tones of all these damaged women in their songs, is because, like, there's something about actually going through things that completely changes your creative mind and your process.
Yeah. You know, and I love what you're doing with mental health. And I think it's super important, because I don't think, you know, and I'm going to just talk from a male perspective here for a second, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
You know, I don't. When it comes to health, mental health, especially in men, like, I don't think it's not taken seriously, you know?
No.
Because there's this stigma of, you know, and trust me, I've had the outlook too. It's like, you're a man, deal with it, you know, get over yourself, right?
But, well, like, that's what they tell, right? Yeah, men to do.
Right. But, like, you know, you talk to people, and you talk to guys especially, and, like, you actually are able to, you know, get them to take their walls down and actually talk to you. It's amazing how, you know, how heavy life is for a lot of guys.
Oh yeah. And I think I've been lucky enough to have a dad who's always been like, I'm like a bad motherfucker, and I'll do what I have to do, but, like, I can also cry and be okay with that.
Right. Oh yeah. Hell yeah. You know, it's crazy. You know, we live in a world where it's like, you know, if you're a man, you don't cry. If you have no emotion, you have no feeling. You know,
no, just, and it's like, it's not the 1920s anymore.
Right.
I don't
right.
understand why we're still stuck in that.
Right.
Men, like, can't cry, but women can just be like a mess.
Right. 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 Trust me. Some of that has gone a little too far. But
yeah.
But
yeah, you're right.
You know, but you know, I say it all the time. They don't make men like they quite like they used to. You know, like,
yeah.
And I'm a product of that. but still, like, you know, there's still a level of, you know, reality to it.
Yeah, which is why I love, like, as I said, Jelly. I think he's absolutely amazing. What he's done for Nashville, what he's done for himself and men.
Yeah.
He's one of those people who's like, you know, he's a really, really rad human, but he could also be completely okay with, like, crying
right
in front of everybody. And
right.
I think that's super, super rad and different.
Because yeah.
all these men in, like, country music, there's, like, a disconnect. They have amazing voices, but you never actually get to the root of who they are.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, especially not, you know, candidly, you know, you might get to the root of who they are through their music, but even that, you know, there's still a level of, you know, distance.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy. So let me, I'm going to go back a little bit. Now, is that EP from when you were 11, is that still out there in the world somewhere?
It sadly is.
It sadly is.
And there's music videos to go along with it.
Oh, God. I got to dig those up. Or, you know, better yet, I think you should send those to me, because I'm curious as hell.
I will. Yeah. It's one's called Texas Swing, and the other's called Kiss Me. And it's actually funny because looking back, everything was, like, so nerve-wracking to me. So I wanted to throw up while I was making these music videos. And
sure.
It's like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a music video. But the guy in the videos with me, like, he became one of my, like, longest friends. We've been friends since that age and never stopped. So I guess that's like the good thing about all of that. But I wish somebody would have been like, wait till you're like 16 to release music.
That's awesome. So now, you know, now what are you doing? Now what are, you know, because I, you know, looked you up and did all that stuff, and you have quite the social media following. Like, how have you been able to build your brand to what it is now?
So Instagram back in the day was a wild place.
Yeah, it sure was.
It was, and you could easily build your algorithm with the right, just like hashtags and techniques. And so I was honestly, all I was doing was posting consistently, putting the hashtags, following people who were like-minded like me and seeing who followed them and answering people when they commented. No one like wants to answer the people who comment on their posts.
Right.
And I'm like, that's the most important crowd, and you need to like focus in on that.
Yeah.
And so I've just been building it for years and years and years and doing it that way, which is why I think my Instagram following is so huge.
Yeah, because it is. It's like I started, I was like, Jesus Christ.
It's pretty good. I know. And good. I always tell people I did not pay for that blue check. Like many of them think you're supposed to. I'm like, no, I earned that. I never paid for it. And when I got it, it was like I got a Grammy. It meant a lot.
Yeah. Did you now at that time when you got yours, did you have to like submit and all that, or was it just given?
Oh, I submitted like 100 times. I was not letting them give up on me.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I've thought about it on my end, but I think you have to have like an X amount of followers before you could even, you know.
At that time, I think it was like, I don't know, like I've seen really small accounts have blue checks, but they pay for it.
Right. Right.
So I don't know.
I might even pay for it.
Instagram's weird.
It is.
Honestly, it feels nice. It just feels nice to feel important.
Yeah. Right. Hell yeah. Now, do you do anything else like TikTok and any of that shit?
Yeah. So
yeah. Hell yeah.
I am not very good at posting on TikTok. I have not fallen in love with TikTok like I should.
Yeah.
I did have a video go viral. It wasn't of me singing. It was of me making fun of Nickelback.
Oh, come on. Leave Nickelback alone.
No, I love Nickelback.
No,
they suck. Don't get me wrong. I love Nickelback.
Yeah. You know, I think Nickelback's one of those bands that, you know, we love to shit on, but deep down we love to love too.
Oh, no. I love This Is How You Remind Me. Like, that is my go-to song.
It wasn't even around the year you were born.
Well, okay. So I always like to say I was truly raised white trash, and I'm proud of it. I'm very proud of it. Like, I grew up in a trailer park. And so you would assume what my parents' music taste is.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the video. It was like Gen Z hating on Nickelback, but I grew up with a hillbilly trailer trash father. So it got like, gosh, 500,000 views in like a day. And then I just didn't post consistently afterwards.
That's awesome. That's you know, go out when you're on top, Bailey. That's what I said.
Yeah. Now I'm trying to post more original stuff, but honestly, I'm better at just being funny on TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah, I say it all the time. And, you know, my wife says, she's like, you know, you need to post more on TikTok. You need to post more here and that. And it's like, there's so much that goes into posting a TikTok video that it's, you know, it's like, oh.
And no one understands how hard. I know this is really tone deaf because I also have worked in retail and worked very much real jobs.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of work that goes into like content creating.
There really is. Like, it's a full-time job in and of itself.
It is. And I know people are going to be like, whatever. Like, and I understand that. There are people who work much, much harder.
Oh, yeah.
But the dedication and creativity, and especially when you aren't feeling creative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what do I post?
Like, what do you want me to say?
Yeah. So, I mean, recently I've just been releasing a lot of music this year. Just had a show about 2 days ago. I've been touring. I went to Montana and Utah and got to do some cool things there. Been really starting up with this mental health movement. I made a little podcast with it, but honestly, I need to get better with that too. So I have a lot of goals for like 2023 in general. And yeah, just doing the music thing, navigating, still being a teenager, but almost being an adult is really terrifying.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, it's funny because it's like, how many podcasts have you done?
In general?
Yeah.
I can't even count.
Cause like, you know, I usually have to, you know, depending on the guest, I usually have to like pry shit out of people. And
then I'm just like,
and you're just like, well, this is what I've got coming out. And it's like, wow, I don't even have to ask. It's awesome.
I think it's also like being media trained.
Yeah.
From a young age. It's wonderful because now when I do interviews, they're like, well, this wasn't painful. And I'm like, I'm very, very happy about that.
Yeah, no. And it's awesome because, you know, not to bring the curtain back too much. Actually, I don't care. My life's pretty much wide open. I have zero media training. Absolute zero. I started this strictly out of boredom. I was reviewing Eric Church albums that I liked, and I got sick of talking to myself, and I wanted to talk to somebody else. Because talking to myself was driving me nuts. And that's saying something because I'm an only child and I love to hear my own voice.
That's hilarious.
So, you know, I opened it up to people and I was like, who wants to come on the show? And like the floodgates opened and I was like, you all really want to fucking talk about yourself? Like, it's unbelievable.
And that's not like, I don't necessarily like talking about myself, but I do like telling my story.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very relatable for a lot of people. I have people in my DMs like trauma dumping to me, and I'm like, that's fine because I'm trauma dumping to all of you.
Right. And that's great. I mean, you know what I mean? It's not great. You've gone through what you've gone through, but it's great to be able to have a voice in people, you know, gravitate to it.
Speaking of Eric Church, what is your favorite song from him? Not me asking the question.
No. I love it. I love when my guests ask me questions because it's like, I'm always the one that's like, well, tell me about you. And
yeah,
you know, I'm so full of myself that every now and again, I want to be like, well, what about me? You know?
Yeah, no, I get it.
So my favorite Eric Church song, I have two. One is Wrecking Ball.
Fact. Yes.
And, you know, I'll tell this story because my wife doesn't listen to my shows, which is okay. but, you know, it's kind of like a my wife and I song, you know.
Yeah.
Anybody that's ever listened to it, like, they get it. So that was one. I wanted to actually play it at the end of our wedding, but she wouldn't let me. but that's okay.
I mean, when we were in the car when I first heard it, and I remember my mom being like, that's a hit, and I'm like, well, yeah, he wrote it for women,
right?
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I really love lightning's
good.
Yeah. I think Lightning is one of Eric's best storytelling songs he's ever written.
Mine's kind of generic, but it's Springsteen, and okay. It's because I'm from Philly.
Yeah.
My mom is the biggest Bruce Springsteen fan. Used to go to all of his little shows back in the day, like trying to meet him.
That's awesome.
And so I have a Born to Run tattoo. Like it's an actual thing.
That's awesome. That,
yeah. That song was a jam.
Yeah.
He just makes really feel good music.
He really does. You know, so my real first run-ins with country music were Eric Church. I had worked at a smaller venue out here where the Patriots play that no longer exists. And Eric would come through like twice a year. And I had friends that were going to the show, and I was, you know, I was like, you know, I typically started the show and then left before the show even started because I was all done work.
Yeah.
And they were like, listen, you have to stay. You have to see this guy. And I'm like, I really don't like country music. And, you know, at the time, I really didn't. Like, it's only been within, like, the last 7-8 years.
Yeah. You know,
within the last decade, I would say, that I really like country music. And they were like, just check this guy out. And I was like, all right. So the first time he came through, I saw him. And I was like, damn, that was great. And then the second time he came through was later in that year. And, you know, it went from a half full venue to a sold out venue in minutes kind of thing.
That's insane.
And, you know, this was all within like the first two albums he ever put out. And it was just incredible, like mind blowing. And, you know, for me to see him in a small club like that to, you know, now being able to see him at Gillette. At, you know, bigger arenas, it's like, damn, like that's full circle.
That is full circle, and it's rare that like you get to see them at that point,
right? Yeah,
there's not a lot of like legends living today that you can see live.
No, there really isn't. And you know, I see all these newer people coming up, and you know, within the independent world, or even people that have had hits on the radio, you know, and like nothing against them. They're all great, you know, but there's nobody that I've seen in the last year and a half, 2 years that really jumps out to me that says, you know what? All right. In 10 years, this person's going to be huge.
Also, don't forget our friends over at hogwashandrhinestones.com. Our good friend Ray is the owner over there. She makes incredible clothing that you've seen all over the place, from Nashville to Boston to everywhere in between. Some really big names have worn her stuff. That's Hogwash, the letter N, rhinestones.com. Check them out. Tell them the Boots and Whiskey podcast sent you. You won't be disappointed. Check them out. Hogwashandrhinestones.com.
I kind of feel the same way about it. And I think it's because people are making music for radio,
yeah,
and not making music to just make music, which is why I love, like, I'm in love with, and I was listening to these people before they were big. I just need to say that. And yeah. like I love that side of things, but there's no females that are like jumping out to me.
No. No, you know what? I think the only female that's out there right now that is at their level that has the potential to jump out is Margot Price.
She does, but I feel like I don't know.
Yeah, no, but
they won't let her.
I think her sound might hold her back.
They won't let her.
No,
just
right.
Because of what she sings about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I agree 100%.
Which sucks. Yeah. I was talking to someone, speaking of seeing bands live, I did a Led Zeppelin cover at my last show. We always do Whole Lot of Love.
Yeah.
And this guy came up to me afterwards and he said, I loved your Zeppelin. I saw them at Woodstock, like an older guy. And I was like, well, you have to tell me more. Like, what were you doing at Woodstock? And he was like, I don't know. We were all like insanely high.
Right. Right.
Well, I'm like, well, then you really don't know what you were
hearing. Right. Right. You don't even know if you actually did see them.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's damn. You know, because growing up, that's what my life was. You know, my parents, it was classic rock. You know, my first concert ever was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. You know, and that was, you know, 1999, I want to say, 2000-ish. And yeah, we just, you know, I saw Kiss. Kiss was like my second concert ever, you know. So I've seen a lot of shows, and I've seen a lot of the greats before they couldn't do it anymore at that level.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm very fortunate. You know, I got to see McCartney. I got to see Santana. I've seen Eric Clapton. You know, I've seen, you know, I saw the Allman Brothers while they were, you know, still all together and still alive, and it was just awesome.
And my dad actually saw Stevie Ray Vaughan.
He's
from Texas, And he was a kid when he saw Stevie Ray Vaughan in one of the Texas bars. And I was like, that's rare.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've seen Ozzy. You know, I saw Ozzy a couple of times. You know, during the whole Osbournes craze.
But, that's insane. Yeah. That was such a weird time.
It was. It was a weird time. But, you know, my parents got to see Randy Rhoads play with Ozzy. So it's,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're really OG.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, I think the story goes is my parents saw Ozzy at Randy Rhoads. I want to say it was in Worcester. I know my father's listening to this and probably going to text me and be like, "No, that's not what it was. It was this." Yeah. you know, I know it was shortly before Randy had died, you know.
Yeah.
So but to be able to be like, hey, I saw Randy Rhoads shortly before I died was, you know, it's something.
I think that's really amazing. I know my parents have seen, like, my mom loves Prince. She saw Prince. Elton's doing his farewell tour, but she saw him too. Yeah,
I would have loved to have seen Prince.
Right. Like, there's no one that I really, there's people I want to, like, I'm going to the Jelly Roll concert tonight at Bridgestone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The last time I went, it was when he was at the Ryman, and everyone was, like, smoking weed in the church. I was like, babes.
Right.
We don't have to be this white trash.
No, yeah, like, cut that out. That's the Ryman.
Right.
That's the mother church. People. Like, fuck. What are you doing? you know, yeah. It's funny, because Jelly Roll was here earlier this year. And before he kind of really broke out, you know, and everybody was before Son of a Sinner, you know,
yeah,
hit the radio and all that. And like, obviously doing this, like, I knew who he was, and I didn't go. And like, I wish I had. I really, really wish I had.
You know, he is proof that it's really the person you are.
Yeah.
Because his music's great and his voice is great, but it's him and his wife and his daughter and just the whole thing. Like, they need their own Osbournes show.
Right.
Like, it's a little white trash bash. And I love it. I love them, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's, I love their story. I really do. You know, because, I mean, you look at them as a couple, right? And
very unconventional.
Right. The social norms we live in, you know, nobody that looks like Bunny is going for anybody that looks like Jelly.
Yeah.
It's just not happening. Yeah. You know? But like, they work. And I'm with you 100%. You know, Netflix should jump on that shit and be like, hey, we're going to give you a show.
They really should. Because, you
know, I mean, they gave Kofi Anderson a show. Give fucking Jelly Roll a show.
They always give, like, the funny Southern Family shows.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. It's really, really crazy. So when you're, how often are you playing shows?
So I try not to, I refrain from playing on Broadway. I play there sometimes.
Oh, I don't blame you. It's a,
yeah, it's a mess.
It's not like, it's not like it used to be.
No. And I tell people, don't aspire to be a Broadway singer. Aspire to be a stadium singer.
Right.
I try to play shows at least 4 a month. I know that's not a lot, but I don't know. I like to create music more than I like to do shows.
Okay.
As bad as I love shows and I love the adrenaline rush that comes with them, but I'm also an anxious person, so I get stressed out.
Yeah.
I like to just be like in the studio and like deep in the creative process. That's my favorite place to be.
So are you doing this full time, or do you have like another source of income in between?
So I'm not doing this full time at the moment. I work at Sephora.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. My parents would never allow me not to have another job.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're both super hard workers, and they've kind of instilled in me that I have to be the same.
Right. Plus, that's great.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult to make.
That's great. Now, you know, it's funny because I love asking that question sometimes, because it also brings the human element to it, right? Where,
yeah,
you know, you do have a job. And you know, a lot of artists don't want to allude to that, like, at all. Like, they,
I know,
like,
which is like bullshit.
Right.
But it's because a lot of the younger artists that you see down here don't have a job,
right,
and they're just really, really privileged and lucky.
Right, right, right. You know, but like, even like the local scene around here, like in Boston, like the local country scene, like there's a lot of people. You know, some of them are great, some of them are not so good. But you know, there's one artist out of here that is, he's awesome. Like, I think he really has what it takes. He's been on like Texas country radio and all that stuff. And you know, I know, because I know him so well, and I'm probably fucking, you know, sending out way more than I should. But like, I know he has a regular job, but you would never know. And he doesn't want to allude to it at all.
That's so funny, because I have people coming to my work and they'll be like, I know you. I don't know where I know you from, but I know you are like people from music. And I don't know, unless I've made it like entirely big and I can make all my money from music, I'm gonna have a normal job.
That's awesome. Good for you. Good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what does the next year look like for you musically? Like, do you have like a, you know, I only release music every so many weeks or months, or, you know, what does that look like for you?
So I have a lot of the music for the next year already ready. The music videos ready. I've pre-planned a lot of it, but I also have a bunch of new music I've been writing that I'm getting in the studio to record actually tomorrow. And I'm working with somebody new who I'm very, very excited about. So it might sound a little bit different.
Nice.
And, yeah, I'm excited about that. Just a lot of writing, getting things together. We finally found a brand that I love and that fits me truly. So just kind of grinding that all out.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I can't wait to see what else you get out there, because what you already have is great. So I can only imagine, you know, and I can't wait to go back and listen to what you have out.
And, oh gosh.
And, you know, just knowing your story now and
yeah,
understanding it, you know, because
you will,
it's
see,
like,
you will see where it's like, something happened.
Yeah. Because, you know, I was listening to some of it and it was like, there's a little angst to this. And it's like, I wonder why, you know?
Yeah.
And
there's your why.
right. There it is. I now I know. It's awesome. I love that you have a team that, you know, gives off the, again, not to, you know, blow up your spot, but like, makes it, like, you, this is what you do, like, this is all you do, you know. I love that.
Yeah, my team is absolutely amazing. It was a lot of trial and error trying to find the right people in Nashville, and actually half of them aren't even from Nashville,
right?
But it's just about who you feel comfortable with and who you have like a true connection with. Half of these people are actually like family to me and friends in real life, and
that's awesome.
I think you need that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm like stuttering now because I'm like just so in awe of how great you're doing.
Thank you.
You know, we've recently started a quasi management company, and I've taken on some clients and all that. And, you know, it's interesting to deal with management companies and PR companies and like see the way they do things and the way I do things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so different, you know, because I'm, you know, I care about the artist. I care about, you know, getting them heard, you know, and you run into managements and PR people that are like, well, we have to keep this image. And it's like, no, we don't have to keep anything. You know?
No, you really can reinvent yourself,
right,
as much as you want. And I was actually just, I love like researching artists. I'm a music geek in that way, and so I know everything there is to know about like Amy Winehouse, and I've studied her and studied her and studied her. But I was just like researching Lana Del Rey. And this girl has like reinvented herself like 5 times.
Yeah.
So you can always, and it worked. It finally worked.
Yeah.
And she's like, I would say very, very popular. So I think it's, you can do what you want. There really are no rules.
No, there isn't. You know, it's, I remember, you know, when Lana first came on the scene, like I was absolutely obsessed with her.
You know, I know. You yeah, know, me what, too. What... I shouldn't have been. I was like 11, 12.
Right.
Listening to this. Someone needed to take my phone.
and I thought she, I mean, I still think she is. She's absolutely gorgeous. And her voice, like, is just mesmerizing. You know, like.
Yeah, no,
She could sing me the phone book and I'd be like, this is incredible.
She was also someone who I think took risks.
Yeah.
The way she dresses is the way her music sounds. And I love when those kind of like blend together, when the style and the music are the same. It's just very, very cool. Kind of like a Prince type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very eclectic, but very, what's the word I want? Very recognizable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's, you know, it's crazy how great she is and doesn't get really the publicity and the recognition she deserves.
Well, I don't think she'll ever be taken as seriously as she wants to be, just because of the way her music is and because, you know, she's very, very pretty. I think sometimes people just look at like women as a pretty face.
Oh, yeah.
In the industry. Yeah. And nothing more. And it's like, no, we can sing and yeah. we can write.
Yeah.
We can produce. Like, we can do the same things as you.
Right. Right.
So.
Right. No. All right. So I got to ask you, you know, we do have a couple of questions before we round everything out. And
yeah.
So I'm going to ask two questions that I always ask. And I typically don't ask one of them to people under 21, but I mean, you open the door. So.
Okay. Yeah.
One is, you don't strike me as somebody that wears boots, but do you wear boots?
I wear like not the boots you're thinking of.
Yeah. What do you got? Doc Martens and the.
Like Doc Martens, yeah. Very funky, like 70s kind of. I don't want to call them stripper boots. They're not stripper boots. they look the same.
That's awesome. Why would you know what a stripper looks like, Bailey? You're
well. I have a lot of. Fun
I have a lot
friends.
Of stripper friends.
Yeah, I live a very unique life.
Apparently, I love it. Oh my god, yeah. God, I can't wait for Dad to listen to this episode. He's gonna be so excited.
I'm telling you, if I had like my own TV show. They'd be like, what is wrong with this girl?
Just put her in a fucking straitjacket because she's
it literally. It would be like an Office episode.
Oh, my God. That's awesome. So, all right. So, stripper boots. We got it. Now, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, but do you have a whiskey of choice in your heyday of being a rebel without a cause?
So I wasn't like a big whiskey drinker. I feel like that's like a, I don't want to say an older person.
Whoa.
I don't want to say that.
Jesus.
But when you're 16, you're not drinking whiskey.
You're not. You're nope.
The closest thing, like I always say that it was like Tito's vodka, which is so gross. And literally I think of it today and I'm gonna throw
God,
it
you're a stereotypical white girl. Way to go.
Yes, thank you.
That's right. My wife's drink of choice is like Tito's and sugar free Red Bull. So
I would mix it with orange juice and I would steal it from my dad. And I would steal it from under his bed where he would put his alcohol.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it was that. And like, I remember my first drink I ever had was like Mike's Hard Lemonade. Those two make me want to throw up.
Oh, yeah, they're gross.
Because you drink them till you're like insanely drunk.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Right. And it's all that acid and the acidity to it. Fuck that. Yeah. Wow. That's. You have lived a life, so far, Bailey. That is very intriguing, and I really thank you.
During this time, I was on American Idol.
Wait, hold on. You were on Idol?
I was.
Like, did you make it far?
So I made it to Hollywood.
Okay.
I made it to the first week of Hollywood week. I got to meet, at that time, it was Lionel, Luke, and Katie. I was 16, so it was in the height of all of my bullshit.
Yeah.
And I remember them telling me that my voice wasn't country. And it was more like blues and soul. And I was like, okay, well, that's fair.
Yeah.
Luke didn't like me, but that's fine because I didn't like him either.
Right. I always say Luke Bryan, never heard of her.
Yeah. My dad always shows me the Beavis and Butthead meme, which I love Luke now. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As a person, he's hilarious, even if you don't like his music. But yeah, I made it to the first week of Hollywood week, got out the first round, and then like the problem with this is where my problem was with like reality TV is they wanted to, you know, highlight my brother. I had a really sad story, so of course they wanted to talk about that.
Right.
But they would make us like redo scenes where like my dad is sobbing talking about it. Or I remember when I got off, I got into the interview room and they were like, so how do you think, because at that time my dad had lost his job just because of everything he was going through. How do you think like your parents are going to feel now that like you got voted off and like your dad lost his job and he was counting on you? And I'm like, what the fuck?
Right.
I'm fucking 16. Of course, like other people are crying, but I'm like, fuck y'all.
Wow.
You know. That's why I guess I try not to talk about it because it was a good experience and I'm so, so grateful for it. But at the same time, it was shitty.
Yeah. Wow. You know, it's funny you say that because, you know, we've had a lot of, I've talked to a lot of people that have been an Idol or, you know, The Voice or whatever. And it's, you know, even if I know going into it that they've been on those shows, like I hate talking about it. And I've learned to hate talking about it. At first, I was like, oh, they've been on Idol or they've been on The Voice. Like, this is great. But now it's like, you know, especially, again, you know, please don't take this the wrong way. But, like, you know, it wasn't like you were a top 10 or a top 5. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, yeah, you've made a great accomplishment, right? But, you know, nobody's going to listen to this because Bailey James was on Idol.
No. And honestly, I look at the way the shows aren't the way they used to be.
Yeah.
And they don't have as big of a platform. And I honestly think it's because the artists are speaking out and being like, no, they treat us like shit.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. We had, you know, we'll find out, you know, we'll have found out by the time this episode airs, but, Morgan Miles, she's on The Voice right now, and you know she's made it to the finals, and she was on our show like right at the beginning of The Voice starting for this past season, and you know she was obviously had to be very tight-lipped about everything.
Yeah,
but you know she didn't at the time, she didn't know where the hell she was going or what was going on. You know, it was just the, you know, the chair turns at that point for The Voice. You know, so I like to say that, you know, we got into the Morgan Miles game before she was famous.
You really know? Did. I mean, you really did.
You know, we discovered Morgan. No, we didn't at all. But yeah, you know, but I hear it all the time from people and from artists, and it's how much of a shit show a lot of those shows are.
They can be. And I think they also can be like great platforms for people. But
yeah,
I mean, One of the girls that went to the same vocal coach as me, she got on the first new season of like American Idol when they had revamped it and everyone was watching it.
Yeah.
And she talks about it like it was the worst thing ever because it messes with you.
Yeah.
Singing and music should never, ever be a competition.
No.
Because everyone is creative in their own way. And right. That's why there's different genres and you can sing what we have free will. Like,
Right.
We were just talking about that the other day. Me and another girl who was on one of those shows. She plays in the band with me. She's an amazing singer-songwriter, and she plays the fiddle. It should never be a competition.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, Bailey, I'm going to let you go. I thank you so much for being on, and Jesus, I hope we get to talk again on this show or even in general, because I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, hell yeah. I'm so excited to, you know, watch your story unfold as you continue, because with what you've done and what you've gone through already, I can only imagine how much better it's going to get. I can only imagine.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Oh, hell yeah.
Ramble on.
Absolutely. And when I know when the episode's going to release, I will reach out to you and that we can, you know, work together and get it out there.
Okay. Sounds good.
Awesome, Bailey. Well, have a great time at Jelly Roll tonight.
And, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you.
Of course, we can't forget our friends at the Dirt Road Scholar Supply Company out of Canada. That's drsupplyco.com. They have great stuff. All of the hats I pretty much wear, all the camo hats you see me wear either on TikTok or in pictures or whatnot, all come from the Dirt Road Scholar Supply Company. A big thank you to those guys out there. drsupplyco.com. Check them out. Canadian company. Great stuff. Check them out. Well, there you have it, everyone, our conversation with Bailey James and our last of these important conversations, these feel-good stories, these, you know, stories that need to be heard conversations for the month of January. So thank you so much for being a part of all of this. Next week, we start February. Holy crap, February is already here. Can you believe it? But first, thank you so much for Bailey for coming on and telling your story and telling it so openly, to you and your family. You know, we are always here for you here at the Boots and Whiskey Podcast. And like I said at the top of the show, if you ever feel the need to talk to somebody or want to talk to somebody or feel like you're all by yourself, you're not. We are here for you. There's a lot of people out there for you. There's a lot of places you can go to talk to somebody. Please talk to somebody, and, you know, take care of your mental health. Mental health is huge, and, you know, it's not just for women, it's also for men, too. Take care of your mental health. Again, not to be a downer, I don't think this is a downer episode at all. I think it was very positive, and Bailey is just kicking ass and taking names, and, you know, she's going to be around a while, so, you know, get at her now, because in the next couple of years, you won't be able to. So with that being said, thank you so much again for being here. For those of you all new tuning in, follow us on all of our socials, Boots and Whiskey Podcast, and we will see you next week. And until then, keep the boots on the ground and the whiskey in the glass. Y'all, cheers.